Okay, so today's topic is a fascinating, fascinating topic, and it really has major, major, major implications to so many different areas in Jewish life, and is an area that, no question, has a personal impact on people's lives in dealing with people who are severely injured, or people who are literally teetering on the life and death. So, and not only does it have to deal with organ donations, but the time of death and establishing time of death has many, many, many implications in real life, not just, you know, in theory. And what makes it even more complicated is that in the modern era, we can do things that we're not able to do even just a few decades ago from a science perspective. So we know that the hospitals are way, 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 way over in terms of capacity. They have way too many people in beds. And therefore, shall we say, they need to make room and make space and free up a bed on an ongoing basis. They have no alternative. They really feel there's tremendous pressure. Funding is an issue because having people just take up a bed, once they hit a certain critical level, there's no additional funding. Once hit the number of days, so it's really complicated. There's financial constraints, there's emotional constraints, and this is all coming together. And one area that manifests itself is the idea of organ donations. The reason is because to donate certain organs, in order to be able to donate, for example, your heart, they literally put the person next to you. When the person is dead, they take out the heart and they have to put it into the person in need of a heart or a liver right away. If there's too much of a delay, it begins to decay, and in fact, it is not a viable from a donation perspective. Okay, so there's a lot. There's really a lot at stake. So here we go. Trying to think. So, from a biological perspective, death is considered the process which ends with the death of all cells in your body, meaning that there's disintegration of the body tissue. That being said, however, legal and even halachic definition, according to Jewish law, a person is dead well before the cells in the body have died. And what we need to kind of figure out is, you know, how do we know when a person's dead? When is a person really dead? So in order to kind of understand the definition in Jewish law of death, I want to actually go to a very odd case. Not odd. It's, well, I guess it's kind of strange. And that is the source that's in front of you. Source number one. Source number one is taken from the Talmud in Yoma that says, if a person upon whom a building has collapsed and there exists a doubt whether he is there or not there, alive or not alive, whether a Kuti or a Jew, you, what's called mefakhin alav as hagal, you remove the debris. The reason why you remove the debris is because you violate Shabbos, violate Yom Kippur, you violate Jewish holiday in order to save a life, even if it's you're in doubt. It's called safek pikuach nevesh. So we don't know if this person is alive or dead. We need to remove the debris. Now, they find him. Obviously, continue to remove the debris, right? However, if they find him dead, leave him. Because the dead body is muktzeh. You can't move a dead body on Shabbos, so on the Jewish Sabbath. So if you find the dead body, unfortunately, you have to just stand there and wait until Sabbath, or Jewish holiday, ends. So that's nice and dandy, but how in the world are you supposed to know if he's alive or dead? This was, you know, 2,000 years ago. So here's the answer. It quotes a brisa that, how far do you reach? How far do you search? Until the nose. Some say until his heart. Rav Papa said they disagreed where the search went from bottom to top, meaning from feet to head. But from the top to bottom, from head to feet, once you reach the nose, you do not need to go any further. Why? Because all in whose nostrils, right? V'yipach papav, nishmat chayim. So it appears from here that how do you know if someone is dead or someone is alive? You reach the person's body What do you expose, right? So you see the person's finger, and that's going to help you know if they're alive or dead. I mean, I guess if you see their finger moving a lot, that. By the way, that's not even so simple. Right? Right. It's not even so simple, by the way. So they're like, what do you have to know? What do you have to see? So there it seems to say that when you see a person's nose, it will help you, which seems to imply that respiration. You're dead when you stop breathing because you can't, you know, restore the respiration. So if you see that they're breathing, then we are able to determine, since they're breathing, they are alive. They're not breathing, they are dead. That seems to be fairly straightforward, but it is anything but straightforward. Yeah, question? Are you okay?
Not really a question. Just trying to think, like, from a nursing standpoint, like, if someone's not breathing, there's still ways that you can, like,
okay,
come back.
Okay, that's not the problem.
So it's like,
okay, good, very good.
Actually, no, he's dead.
Okay. The next source that we have, by the way, you should know that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch both say that the halacha is, yeah, you go into the nose, you find the nose, and the nose will determine if the person is dead or alive. Meaning, you stop breathing, you can't restore the respiration, the person's dead. The Chacham Tzvi, who I realize we're fast-forwarding a very long period of time, says, no, not so simple. And the reason is because they found the chicken, and the chicken has no heart. Is this bird kosher? The Chacham Tzvi says, listen, a chicken cannot live without a heart. It must have had a heart, but it lost its heart. While the Chacham Tzvi is discussing this, he says it is possible to breathe without a heartbeat. Now, how in the world does this mean? So take a look now at the source that you have in front of you. The Chacham Tzvi, the soul dwells in the heart. But sometimes, even though the soul is still in the heart, there's no apparent heartbeat. That is to say, externally on the chest, because of great weakness, it is exceedingly clear that there is no breathing without life in the heart, from which and for which there is breathing. The reason that life depends upon the breathing of the nose is that it is through the nose that warm air leaves the heart, and cold air enters to cool the heart. And if there is no heart, there is no breathing. Meaning, the Chacham Tzvi says, what is the Gemara in Yuma talking about? It's talking about a case where the heart is still working, but we can't find their heartbeat. Why not? Well, because there's debris everywhere. So what are we going to do? We're going to look for maybe a sign of respiration. But once the heart stops beating, the brain begins to degenerate, and event, of course, the notion, I think in the medical terminology, is called spontaneous respiration, stops. So if there's respiration, there must be a heartbeat. The problem is, the opposite is, now Chacham Tzvi probably reaches an incorrect answer from a biological perspective. Okay, so this Chacham Tzvi, well, what he says is interesting, it's actually not true biologically. So I won't point that out. Source number 4, however, is very different. The Chatam Sofer understands the Gemara really in its plain sense, and I think this is right, that the time of death depends very exclusively on respiration. Meaning, when there's no heartbeat, there's no breathing, there's no breathing, there's no heartbeat, and then the person is dead. That is, in fact, the opinion of the Chatam Sofer. And that is source number 4. Okay? Because we know today, from a technology perspective, we can have a heart beat without the brain because we have a respirator. So that really is going to be the million-dollar question. Meaning, if spontaneous respiration ends, but artificial respiration, meaning connected to a machine, that is what is continuing to have the heart beat. What is the status of such a person? So the heart is beating not because the brain is sending signals, because I have a machine circular pumping the heart. After all, the heart is just a muscle, a pump. So I can create an artificial pump. But without a brain, there's no thing telling my heart to beat, because the brain is dead. So that's the real question, and that's where the serious issues come into play. And the reason why these are the serious issues into play is because, take a look at the next paragraph. Successful heart and liver transplants require that those organs be harvested from donor's body while the heart is still beating. If the heart is not beating, you can't have heart or liver transplants. Now, we're not talking about, this is very important, this is where some people have misconceptions. Some people say, oh, he's in a vegetative coma. A person in a vegetative coma is 100% not dead. Absolutely not. Zero. Even clinical death, which is defined as temporary cessation of heart activity, which can be restored by resuscitation, that is also not really considered dead. A person whose brainstem is dead, meaning there's zero activity. No one has ever come out, according to science, from zero activity, from brain death, and walked and been alive. Never happened. Every case that we have where people were declared dead and they quote unquote came back to life, that is because they were declared dead. But they were not, they did not have zero brain activity. And that is very important. Because the Harvard definition of death is the complete loss of brain function. It is not, and that's what it says here, a vegetative state where a person is alive, yes, some autonomic functions can remain. It's different from what's called a coma, which is either induced medically or because of an illness. It is very, very different. Okay? So, and that which the doctors say that this, okay, is that clear? So that's also, I'm pushing forward because I gotta get to the juicy parts, right? So, well, I'm gonna pause in a second. But what I want to show is that the Harvard vision of death is zero brain activity, according to the science medical world out there. No one has ever started to have any type of organ function with after being totally 100% brain dead. All the stories of people who came back to life are all cases where they appear dead, but they actually didn't have zero brain activity. Okay, yeah, question right now.
Okay, so
I'm just going to pause it during questions. Yeah. Let's pretend I have two different people. One person has a head and a body. Next person, head and body. Now, why am I focusing on that? Because I'll tell you why. Person A, their brain is amazing. Their body, decapitated. Car accident. Person B is at the opposite. The body, beautiful. The brain, dead. Can you do a head transplant? You take person A and the body B. Person A, let's pretend, was a great Talmudic scholar, has all the Talmudic knowledge. The body of B was a bodybuilder, tattooed, 6'4", lots of muscles, athletic. Not like this Talmudic scholar, who was a little nerdy. Now you combine the two. Here's a Talmudic scholar whose brain remembers everything from his Talmudic scholar life, but has a body of a 6'2" bodybuilder. Who is that person?
The brain.
So that means the definition of a person is the brain. That defines a person, right? What was that?
I don't know. I
don't understand. So you can talk about that all you want, but I'm talking about on my surgery table. I don't. You know. So which one will the neshama go with, the brain or the body? So here's the problem. Well, you'll see the challenge in a minute. Because if you argue that you're not allowed, that a person in front of a respirator is still alive, which means you're not allowed to have any type of, you don't declare death until even using a respirator, nothing happens. They're totally dead. Even a respirator won't help them. Which eventually on a respirator, that happens. That means if you want to tell me that it's about your heart beating and that's your body, then it's the opposite. Or you want to tell me, I don't care about all this stuff. It's irrelevant. It doesn't tell me anything about it. And also, it's not, you can't do it yet. So, but anyway, these are real questions that people ask. Because as you're going to see in a minute, there's going to be a disagreement. Is it about the brain? Or is it about the heart? Now, one of the most controversial opinions in this entire matter is of Moshe Feinstein.
Sorry.
And what he dealt with this in great detail, and it is not going to be so simple what he said. If you go online, you'll see a lot of controversy about what he said, what he didn't say, what his children argue, what other people argue.
Okay.
So here we go. Source 6. That which the doctors say, the signs of life and death are in the brain, so that if in their estimation there's no longer brain activity, the person is regarded as dead, even though there may still be breathing. Surely the truth is that the cessation of the brain activity is not death. For as long as a person is breathing, he's alive. The fact that the brain has ceased functioning will only lead to death. For the person will stop breathing. Since he is alive, there may be medications in the world, those that are known today are still unknown, that will cause the brain to resume functioning. Thus, it is obvious the one who kills such a person is a murderer who is liable for the death penalty. That's very serious. Second statement. Heart transplant that doctors have recently begun performing involve two actual counts of homicide. For they kill with their hands the donor from which the heart is taken, for he is still alive. Not only according to the Torah law, which teaches us the importance of death, even according to the doctors themselves. For there are those who speak the truth and say that the donor is still alive. Because the wickedness, they are not concerned about this one's life, which is only for an hour or a few days. They also kill the heart patient with their hands, removing many years or decade or even decades from his life. For it is known that many heart patients live for many years. But for those whose hearts have been removed and have had hearts of other people planted in them, they have all died within a short time, most of them a few hours and a few days. Even the patient in Africa, who is still alive after about 6 months, the doctors agree, as I understand, he will not survive. It is amazing the authorities in all these countries allow the wicked doctors to kill two people each time. As much as they already see that nobody survives the procedure, they should punish these doctors as full-fledged murderers. Now, remember, this is the 1970s. I have come to this because we have clarified the matter. And my son-in-law, Rav Moshe David Tedler, saw in all the medical journals that there's no change for the better, even for the recipient of the transplant. For nobody has survived. Okay, fine. Here's the problem. That was 1970. Today, heart transplants, you can live a very long time. So what was true in the 1970s is not true anymore. 40, 50 years later, which is not so surprising because those are advances in medicine. Okay. Next, that was referring to transplants, right? Heart transplants. But go to source number 7. There are patients in a critical condition who are unable to breathe, and the doctors attach a machine to their mouths that allows them to breathe. We call that a respirator. Such a machine allows the patient to breathe even though he's already dead, for such breathing does not turn him into a live person. If no other signs of life are evident and he appears not to feel anything, even a pin prick, as in the condition called coma, then when the machine is operating, one is forbidden to remove it from his mouth, for perhaps he is still alive and this will kill him. If it has stopped working, if it has stopped working, it having run out of oxygen, it should not pick it back up again into his mouth for a quarter of an hour. For if he's not alive, he'll stop breathing. They will know that he is dead. So what does Rav Moshe Feinstein suggest to do?
He said he can't take away it, but
Once it runs out of oxygen, so we have another problem today. Our oxygen tanks don't run out of oxygen. Because in many places, I mean, depending how it works, the oxygen actually is piped in and it could last forever. Because the last thing we want to do is be on a shift and be like, ran out of oxygen. Oops. Right? Okay. Turn the page. Please. Topic 4. This applies to people who took... Okay, this is continuous motion. By the way, this is all motion function. This applies to people who took... Oh, I should have had... I'm going to put another number here. Is it continuation? Oh, sorry, continuation. That's why I put another number. This applies to people who took sick with a certain illness. Those who were injured in a traffic accident, fell out of a window or the like, who, because of conditions of the nerves in areas close to the lungs and respiratory organs, are unable to breathe, after some time breathing slowly by way of an artificial respirator, the constricted areas will expand and they will begin to breathe on their own. Such people, even though they cannot breathe on their own, and there are certainly no signs of life, it may be that they are not yet dead. Since you say that there are now expert doctors who can clarify by injecting a certain dye into the body whether the connection between the brain and the rest of the body has been severed. See? If so, we should be stringent about these. Why? Because what's he trying? That there's still the brain, meaning that if you're going to tell me even for sure we know that it's severed, but the connection between the brain and the brain has been severed, we should still be strict so that even if he does not feel anything, a pinprick, and even though he doesn't breathe, all without a respirator, they should not certify that he's dead until they've performed this examination. For if they see that there is still a connection between the brain and the body, even though he's not breathing, they should keep the machine in on his mouth even for a long time. And here we go. Here's the key line, everybody. Only when they see through this examination. What's examination? Brain-body. There's no longer a connection in the brain and the body. She had to decide this person, I stopped breathing, is dead. Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now, many people interpret this line differently, believe it or not. Rav Moshe Feinstein says, if you could determine... Now, this is the big... The reason why I'm saying if, because it's actually a big if. It's actually not so simple. That there's no brain activity, you declare the person medically and halachically dead. The advantage is that at that point in time, their organs are actually very viable. Many people take this last line of Moshe Feinstein and say it's also that they disagree. Meaning, in source number 8, this becomes, as you'll see in a second, controversial. In practice, I've heard from my son a lot of Moshe David Tendler, Shlita. Courts have only accepted the vision of death that is correct according to halacha, definition referred to by physician that's called the Harvard criteria, which is considered as reliable as decapitation of the patient. For when the Harvard criteria are met, the brain has already begun to degenerate. Even though the heart may still beat for a few days, nevertheless, once the patient can no longer breathe on his own, he's regarded as dead. Bam, 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 bam. Okay. We see Rav Moshe Feinstein seems to say clearly it's about brain activity. Comes along Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he said, no. Take a look. What is he dealing with here? Now, this is where it gets problematic. Is he dealing with a case of organ transplant, or is he dealing with removal from a respirator? They might not be the same case. Even though I might, meaning... When it comes to taking off a respirator, I might say to myself, listen, the person's essentially dead. But then, we're going to say, oh, cut him out for organs? Not so simple. Just because you might call someone dead, from a respirator perspective, doesn't mean necessarily that I give the thumbs up for organ transplant. That is where Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who's a great leading decisor of Jewish law in Israel, in Jerusalem, comes in, the 20th century as well. Meaning, take a look at the bottom of page 4. Even if we say that a patient may be removed from respirator once the brain is dead, his organs can't be removed until his heart has stopped beating. Okay? So that is the issue. And he says, since no mention is made in the Talmud or the Quran for as a brain death, because they didn't know about brain death in the Talmud. They didn't know. They didn't know about brain death. Was in those days. The primary, and primarily because it is not at all visible to the eyes. You cannot see with your eyes a person's brain dead. Requires very complex medical equipment. What can you see with your eyes? Breathing. I can see breathing. Called nostrils. And it is not to the extent to which examination is truly reliable. Meaning, just because they do this system of brain death, is that a reliable system? So even if it's more reliable today, it's not so simple to could you be 100% certain that the brain is completely dead? Unless there's decapitation? Therefore, it is necessary to wait until the heartbeat ceases entirely. And then wait another half a minute. And only then, if the body lies like an inanimate stone, should we treat it like a corpse for all matters? That is. So we see that there seems to be a disagreement between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, New York, Jerusalem. Many people, as you'll see, say, no, even half a minute, you have to wait longer than half a minute. Rabbi Rappaport said, that his father-in-law, if he permitted detaching a patient from a respirator because it's active, because you're pulling him off respirator, he would have allowed to have removal of organs as well. Okay. Rav Wozner says, my heart is exceedingly hesitant whether this medical treatment is at all permissible based on the Torah allowance of medicine, even though you have to heal. But a heart or liver transplant, which is an action that runs counter to the very creation of man, and a total change in natural order to transplant life-sustaining organs from one person to the next, he was not very happy. Indeed, based on this point, I would have been unable to decide, were not in the view of the great authorities, because we're dealing with homicide. And he even wants to argue that taking a heart out would be also considered to be an act of murder. Meaning, what do we see from here? We see there's two major schools of thought. And there are those who want to say, listen, because this is a matter of life, how can you be lenient? On the other hand, by the way, this is talking about dead organ transplant. Live organ transplants are totally different. Live organ transplants, everyone's going to say, is in fact permissible, a mitzvah. If you do it, it's a mitzvah, but we can't force you to do it. Because you can never force someone to do a mitzvah that they give up money and they give up part of their body. You can't force someone to do that. So it's not an obligatory mitzvah. It is, if you do it, it is a mitzvah. Very big difference between the two.
It's very limited to like liver and kidneys, basically.
Yeah, kidneys, well, skin.
Well, is blood donations?
Blood.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. So the question is going to be over heart and over liver and lungs and cornea, which are in very high demand in the world today. There's a very interesting website called HODS, HUDS, Halachic Organ Donor Society, which took all the information that's out there and kind of put both sides of the map on there. Now, this website advocates and argues very strongly for brain death to determine death, for various reasons. The Israeli Rabbanut has seemed to push that way as well. And there's a major issue that goes on in the world today. If anyone is involved, if you do a quick Google search, which I don't recommend you do, on the lack of organs, the greatest country in the world, which lacks organs, has the fewest people contributing from any country in the world, is Israel. Because of halachic reasons. Even secular Jews, no, I'm not giving up organs. You literally eat at McDonald's, well, non-kosher McDonald's. You eat on Yom Kippur, they're not giving up the organs. which is very counterintuitive in America. Or the opposite. A secular person in America is dying to give up their organs. You got it? Pun intended. Right? But in Israel, even the secular community, chas v'shalom, you know, they believe in God, not when they're alive, but they, I guess they believe in God in death, or they're worried about God, shall we say, more during death than during life. And this is a major, major, major issue. And because of the Chilul Hashem, some people are trying to push to have the definition of death be accepted as brain death. But the problem is that we see people who argue and say, it's not so simple to say that. And the other challenge, and this is, I think, a major factor, which makes this even more problematic, is because people are pushing organ donations so heavily. Organs, we need organs, and they're pulling up the scalpel too early. Are they really waiting till there's 100% brain death? And being certain? Or are they willing to go a little bit earlier? And because of the tremendous pressures, and people are like, hey, we need the room, we need the bed, we need the organs, we need, you know. So it's not now, it's in 2 hours from now, or 6 hours from now, or 24 hours from now. What's the difference, right? Between now and 40 hours from now. What's the difference? So if we can get that earlier, financially it's better, organs is better. So there's tremendous pressure in the medical world everywhere to declare people dead. And they can sign off on it because it meets enough of the criteria. And the problem is it leads, from a halakha perspective, to potential challenges. So there's so much, I'm not, you know, there's so many issues that are involved that are medical, that are halakhic, that are social, that are economical, that are complex and emotional, that makes this topic even more complicated. Okay, questions? I'm super fast. Yeah.
So just generally, I know